Hi, folks. Welcome back to On Call with Insignia, where we go on call with leaders innovating the future of Southeast Asia's internet and digital economy, or as we like to call it, ASEAN innovation. So in this episode, we'll be diving into the world of e-commerce aggregators. And given that in Southeast Asia, we've seen how e-commerce has boomed the past few years, and now we have a couple of new companies that are entering the space, enabling a lot more brands and a lot more entrepreneurs to be able to dive in and take advantage of this whole e-commerce boom in the region and in Greater Asia. And one of them is Rainforest. And we're privileged here in the show today to have on call with us the CEO and co-founder of Rainforest, JJ Chai. So a little bit on JJ before we head into the call, right? So prior to founding Rainforest, JJ has been an advisor for several startups in a scale-up stage, as well as previously X to 10X as Southeast Asia's chief executive. He previously worked with founders at Carousel to scale them up from a pre-revenue startup, become Southeast Asia's largest online classifieds platform. And before joining Carousel, JJ was also the Southeast Asia Managing Director for Airbnb. He was the first Airbnb employee in Southeast Asia and helped chart the company's growth in Asia. He's also an angel investor as well. And he's come here on the show to tell us a little bit more about not just Rainforest, but also how entrepreneurs, especially solo or micro entrepreneurs, can really build up their brands for a successful exit.
Before we go on call, don't forget to follow our show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to podcasts. And you can follow us for daily content for founders and investors on Twitter at InsigniaVC and Instagram at Insignia_VC. Now let's head into the call.
So welcome to the show, JJ. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yes, awesome. And when talking about Rainforest, the company has been on a roll this past year since announcing its first round and launching back in May with its $36 million debt and equity round. And then in a short span of a few months, acquiring 6 brands and then raising another $20 million to continue acquiring more brands as well. So it's been quite a roller coaster ride. What has been your biggest learning so far since launching Rainforest and acquiring brands to grow them in Asia?
Well, I think the part that for me is pleasantly surprising is really the diversity and the sheer number of micro entrepreneurs out there. The number of people who actually create their own brands on very little capital. They don't actually take venture capital. They just bootstrap themselves and create their own brands from scratch. So everything from kitchen products to home products, everything you can imagine. The ability for anyone to sort of go down the entrepreneurship path, the barriers are so low now that anyone can do it. I think that was one of the most amazing things that I've seen so far. Just talking to all these entrepreneurs who have created all these brands, and obviously, some of them are looking into doing an exit, but the sheer number, and when you talk to them about the story and how they got started and how easy it was to get started, not all of them, of course, end up overly all successful, but the barriers and the bar to doing this is extremely low now. So I think that's amazing that anyone can be an entrepreneur in e-commerce space simply because supply chain has changed around the world. How you make products has changed around the world and how you distribute products has changed globally.
So you mentioned definitely about all these barriers to entry, lowering significantly, making it much, much easier for anybody to, as you said, become an entrepreneur here in the e-commerce space. So I want to put that into the context of how you met up with your co-founders and decided to start Rainforest. Perhaps you can share that story with our audience.
The way I describe it is sort of the first is the why now? And then why now for this business? And then after that, sort of how do I think about the co-founder formation piece, right? The why now piece is back to the original thesis, which is the cost and the ability to sort of create your own brands as an entrepreneur has changed. Anyone can do it now. Obviously, not all of them become Love Bonitos or venture cap backed brands or Allbirds and so on. But a number of them become quite successful and they do have this problem of having requirements to exit and find liquidity. So that for me was the sort of underlying thesis, and so far it's proven very much true. And if nothing else for me, the number of people who actually are creating their own brands as a side gig, as a main thing, either one, is phenomenal across this part of the world and globally as well. So that was the sort of genesis of it. The other part of it is around, okay, now I have this rough idea that this aggregator play, taking something from 1 to 10 instead of 0 to 1 was compelling for me. Plus also the why now was of this explosion of brands that gets from the 0 to 1 stage. And then the co-founder piece was really around from my experience working with different startups in my career, right? Which is, I think, being deliberate about finding your co-founders is one of the most important things about founding a company, which is who do you want to work with and what kind of skill sets do you have and who are the people that will help complement the skill sets that you have, right? So I had everything around growth, around company building, putting systems in place and scaling up things in a more structured way. I needed tech side of things. I needed someone who understood e-commerce selling and platforms, in our case, particularly Amazon. And I needed someone who understood capital markets and sort of deal-making better than me. So that's where I had in mind 3 different areas to solve that. I didn't have tech, e-commerce, selling, as well as capital formation or deal making. So those were the three areas. And as part of that, I deliberately went out to find people, almost like a recruiting exercise. So I was just sort of talking to different people, asking around, and eventually coming along to finding both Jason and Arula. And of course, it is specifically for Jason, it was actually thanks to the Insignia side of things, we actually made the initial introduction as well. But like the idea of being deliberate and not, it works in quite a number of times, but like forming your startup with the people that just happen to be around you is probably not a good idea, right? Like sometimes it works, but just because they were sitting next to you in class or just happened to be looking for something at the same time, it probably not such a great idea.
I love how deliberate and methodical you were in terms of bringing together a founding team. And it certainly has proven to be beneficial to how Rainforest has grown so far. And you talk about the explosion of brands, and obviously Rainforest, as much as you guys have this huge mission to help out these brands, you can't really help all of them at the same time, right? So I wanted to ask, what are the key considerations that you have when it comes to identifying which are the best brands to help out from Rainforest's perspective?
Today, our business model is set up in a way that we can only help in a case where we actually provide them exit. This is something fundamentally will change over time, which is we are keen to figure out how to help the micro entrepreneurs over time, even as simple as just providing them content about how to be a successful e-commerce entrepreneur, how to grow your business, nothing to do with exits or anything like that, just how to grow an e-commerce brand. So I think that there is this explosion of people who sort of want to create their own brands and create their own products, design things. And I think society in general benefits if we help them along and we have better products and better things for us to use and have impact on, right? Like you see us doing more and more on that. Of course, at the early stages, we need to focus on the core business, which is around acquisitions. And in that space, the very specific things that we look for are really around what are the areas that form the most important part of the 0-1, which is, do you have evidence that you're cross product market fit? Do you have a product where people are already buying it, they're happy with the product, and they will continue buying it or recommend their friends if they had a chance to. So fundamentally, that's the core question we ask ourselves when we look at these brands and products, which is, have they cross product market fit? Is this a product that someone already enjoys? We then put on to our platform around our ability to source better, run supply chain better, distribute better, run marketing better, to then accelerate the growth of that brand and product. So fundamentally in there, we look at things like the reviews and the actual product quality. For every brand that we actually take the product, try it ourselves, everything from eating the cereal to using the kettle, et cetera. So that's the fundamental core thing. There's a lot of other financial metrics and so on, but like at the end of the day, is this a product that already works and people love? And starting from there is a starting point for us to scale.
And speaking of these brands that do pass your criteria or you do see would be a business that you guys would be able to acquire and bring to a successful exit, are there any trends in the market that are impacting the way you look at this pool of potential brands to help in that way? In your latest TechCrunch article, you talked about acquiring this Chinese brand that was looking to break into Southeast Asia. Are there any other similar trends in that regard?
In general, one of the things that's quite clear is the cost to get started to set up a brand is really low now. With just $5,000, you can actually order a batch of products and get it made and brand it, polos, mugs, get it going. Right? That has been going on for quite a while now. What I see happening is these capabilities to manufacture is popping up in a few more places around the world. We start seeing people source from alternative sourcing outside China. So everything from Vietnam to Indonesia to India, a bit more capabilities to manufacture in there. Still in emerging markets, I would say overall, rather in developed markets, but the ability to make goods and products that are high quality and distinctive. Being a bit more spread out outside the sort of like core China factory of the world kind of perception that we all have.
And definitely being in this part of the world where a lot of the manufacturing and supply chain originates certainly makes it even easier as well for entrepreneurs to set things up.
Yeah, it's useful for both, right? Like it's useful for entrepreneurs to set things up because they can rock up to the factory and say like, hey, I've got this idea. I'm trying to produce a yoga top that looks like this, this kind of shit. Can you do it? Being close to the manufacturing capabilities helps you iterate the ideas faster. And similarly for us, right? Like I said, aggregator ourselves, like that's one of the core things that like distinguishes us from the for European and US players in terms of brand operations and aggregation.
So say, for example, I decided to start my own brand, like you mentioned Paulus Mugs. And say I found product market fit, I found a lot of customers, a lot of interest in my product. And you guys see that it's an interesting business to acquire. So can you describe the process from that brand's perspective, from the entrepreneur's perspective of how Rainforest would work with them to help them get to a successful business exit?
We typically come to you or you come to us and we have a first conversation around actually why are you exiting? What are you looking for? Trying to understand like what's the underlying thing, because there are other ways to solve the problems that you have. Because there are some points in time where we actually talk to some entrepreneurs and we tell them, look, I think you actually have a good thing here and you should actually find alternative ways to fund your business and grow this bigger, right? Like don't exit now. This might not be the best thing for you to do, right? Like especially if you've got something good there and the only core thing that's stopping you is really capital. There are other sources and we're happy to point you to different places to look out for this capital, right? The goal is not to try to take someone's brand, right? Our goal is actually to help the entrepreneur in the right way. In those that have fallen in the category of like, look, I'm tired of running this brand. I never realized how difficult it was to actually manage people, manage a team of people. They expect career progression, performance reviews, or things like a combination of capital plus I have other interests, right? Like I started off selling mugs, but like, actually, you know what? I actually like guitars, right? Like being the world's best mug seller might not be my calling, right? So these kind of more legitimate reasons, then we engage, right? Then we talk about, does this product actually have something unique that gives us a starting point and so on. But our starting conversations is really around like, why are you selling, right? Like, why are you trying to sell? Especially those that approach us directly. Right? I think it's sort of trying to understand, is this the right solution for them as well? I think the core thing for us is really trying to make sure it's a win-win thing, right? This is not a single pie kind of game, right? Like options that sort of grow everything for everyone that makes it win-win is critical for us. So the end-to-end process itself, you know, you're keen, we explore the reasons, we determine whether the product has a core loyalist or people who are actually using the product. And then we discuss pricing and negotiate the price and valuation. We also can do things where part of it, you get upfront and earn out the rest of it together with it. So as we grow your brand, you also get a revenue share, profit shares as part of that over the next X number of years. So we help grow your brand and you can sit back, run your next gig. While we sell more mugs, right, you still benefit from it.
One thing I found really interesting about what you just mentioned is that it also depends a lot on the disposition of the entrepreneur themselves, whether or not they see themselves as maintaining this business for the long run, or there's more like a serial entrepreneur who wants to keep trying different products and sell different brands. And that certainly influences the way that you approach or engage with them. And speaking of getting the brand, you talk about Rainforest being the brand from 1 to 10, right? But bringing the brand from 0 to 1 in that early part of the life of the brand before they even consider doing a business exit. What advice would you have for these solo market entrepreneurs to actually find product market fit and set themselves up? Say they do decide to get acquired by Rainforest by you guys. What would be some of the best practices to end up in that position?
We see two models of entrepreneurs who succeed. There is a bit more of deductive type of entrepreneurs. Look from the bottom up and look at the data and say like, okay, this keyword seems to be trending. And then when I look at these keywords, the number of competitors are few and they're typically not well done. Therefore, I start from there and go and find a supplier and find a better product in that keyword or category, right? So very bottoms up deductive, right? There's also a more top down or intuitive approach to things where you see some entrepreneurs just solving their own problems, like in a classic startup entrepreneur case, which is so a bit more intuitive and say like, hey, I actually wish I had something that did this. And then they look around, nothing's there. They talk to the suppliers and try to come up with something and then go and market it, right? So we see both approaches and I think both works. But fundamentally, end of the road, wherever you start, the end of the road is off. You need to validate that the consumer actually wants it, which is in the Amazon world, the e-commerce world, on marketplaces or platforms. Your fastest sign of that is initially conversion rates. Are they clicking on your product or not, right? So that's early signs. And then the later sign is, are they actually reviewing you with 5 stars? So both are good. The nice part about online e-commerce is that you can actually get signs of this even without producing anything, right? So you can actually start doing A/B testing with just the product concepts alone, and you take that incumbent in that category and then you put your product next to it and you ask people to choose and you get a sense around like whether you have a winning chance against the incumbent product there just based on online choice. And that's probably one of the easiest, lightest ways to get started without actually making your first purchase order and getting goods shipped and taking that risk. So I would say no matter where you start from, bottom up or top down in terms of the ideas, testing the idea and understanding what the consumer thinks about it with real choices, not a survey, right? Like you try to make it as much as a real thing as possible is the most important piece. And then you try to risk it. And then once you get some signs that like, yes, I think people will click this more than the other, more likely to buy it, then you go ahead and prove it out with your first batch. And then from there, you get the next set of data, which is, do they review it well? Is it actually up to the expectations? On hindsight, also like quite obvious thing around, is this a product that actually works and better than the next one?
Definitely the advice you gave in terms of having to test, you can actually test without having to produce any tangible product yet. it's something that I guess we are now able to do much more with e-commerce. Because if you think like traditional businesses, they really have to set up a physical shop front first or something like that. Whereas in the e-commerce world, you can just literally make a listing or posting or set up a website or something like that.
Yeah, the actual tools for this, right? Like online for different platforms. For Amazon, there are tools where you can actually go up there and actually load in your product. And then actual Amazon buyers test it and let them decide which one to buy, right? So it's not only that you are getting information, you're also getting information from the right segment. Because what you don't want to do is like ask your friends and family around, like, will you buy A or B? Because they're not shopping on Amazon today. So you also need to understand the specific platform or shoppers as well, or the target audience itself, and get, you know, the highest quality signal around, like, does this have a fighting chance to rank better as well as get better conversions and clicks?
Great point about finding the right signals and reaching out to the right audience for your product. And we've been talking a lot about the process, growing brands, and eventually, say, meeting you guys and engaging with you. So maybe you can share with our audience maybe a case study or scenario of how Rainforest has engaged with a specific brand before, during, and after the acquisition.
It varies quite a bit, right? Like there are some situations where the brands come to us, they're in the mode to sell and say like, hey, give us a quote, give us a bid evaluation, and then let's discuss. If we meet it, we agree, then we go into a due diligence stage. We evaluate the brands for 30, 45 days to check that everything is as advertised. And then we sign the agreements and do a 2-week or so migration over to us. That's one scenario of it. Like there are other scenarios where the founders or entrepreneur may not be in the mode to sell. Like, so we know them, we're really happy to be helpful to them along the way. And then we just have the relationship to understand like what's going on. And then somewhere along the way, then they decide that like, okay, now it's time and like to sell. And that's where we come into engagement. So you see us engage much more early in the process with entrepreneurs. And for us, I'd like to see us being a lot more helpful to the entrepreneurs way ahead of acquisition itself, where they want to exit. If nothing else, just to help the community and help them actually grow their brand.
And that goes back to what you mentioned earlier about you guys are starting out with acquisitions and exits, but then eventually you really see Rainforest as helping these entrepreneurs in more ways than that. And yeah, definitely having those relationships will help towards building that pipeline of services. So I'd like to shift gears now and talk about also the leadership that you brought in recently, which you announced in your most recent round for Rainforest, which is you have the head of acquisition, Yev, and then the head of brands, Christine, who have extensive experience prior to joining Rainforest in terms of growing companies and working with FMCG brands as well. What was the sort of approach in terms of bringing them on into Rainforest? And overall, what has been your approach into bringing the right talent? That sort of continues on from my earlier question about bringing together your founding team, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? It's being deliberate about understanding where the gaps are in the team and how to up-level that each time. So you have around previous experience looking into lending for Amazon sellers. So you understand the Amazon seller really well, understands like how to evaluate their business, understand the risks involved in business and doing deals there. With his banking background, Christine, with her experience really around building brands online, with brands like Away, with brands like ShopBob and so on, understanding platforms and understanding how to go to market from an online perspective and building a brand, right? Like over time, which is today, it's a luggage, but like over time, how to make it actually premium and understanding like, okay, if I buy an Away luggage, what does that actually mean, right? For us, it's really around getting the right talent in and up-leveling from what we have before. One thing also particularly unique for us is also the idea of hiring people who understand the seller. Yev himself was an e-commerce seller himself, right? Like he was selling since the Groupon days, he was selling products back then, right? So he understands as a seller what it means, right? And I think that's critical for us because one of the key people that we work with is the seller, right? So if we treat them as a supplier, right? Like in this, how you are supposed to supply your brand to me, I think that works out very differently from us understanding like, actually, if you are a seller, what kind of concerns will you have handing over your brand, having the empathy there and being able to switch that and the understanding with the seller to understand the fears that they have, concerns that they have. And fundamentally, one thing that like we try to remind ourselves every day is making sure that like we are doing this such as a win-win for both the sellers and us, and also making sure that we're doing deals in the area where we can truly add value to the brand, right? Like in some cases, we cannot actually stick on that brand and do it better than the last owners. We shouldn't be doing those kind of deals.
That goes back to this common theme throughout our whole conversation so far, which is that Rainforest is obviously you guys are focused on acquisitions, but that's not really the main point of how you engage with brands. It's really more of asking the question how you guys can be of best help to them, right? And if the answer is a successful business exit, then you do come in. And speaking of, we've been talking about helping e-commerce brands from that brand perspective, but I also want to zoom out a little bit and talk about how e-commerce aggregators like Rainforest are impacting the e-commerce space in Southeast Asia and how you see that developing over the next 2 years.
I think it's quite hard to tell. Like what I love to see is that like the e-commerce, we help encourage e-commerce sellers around this part of the world, right? Which is if anyone is listening to this podcast now, it's like, hey, actually, you know what? Why don't I do a side gig now? then 2 years time, I can sell the rainforest, right? Like, and you try, right? Like, I think for me, if this emergence of e-commerce aggregators around the region, people to try a bit, right? Because one of the things, like, if you start and then not sure, right? So if I grow this brand, what do I have to do? What do I do with it, right? Because it either goes really big or then I'm stuck with it. But now there's options in between, which is like, if you go to somewhat sizable things, there are players like us who can give you an exit. So give it a go, try to build something unique there, and hopefully we'll encourage a lot more e-commerce entrepreneurs and people who come up with creative and innovative products for the market.
For any entrepreneurs listening in who are thinking about starting their own e-commerce brands, if anything, hopefully this conversation has shown you guys just how easy it can be to actually get out there and get things started and even test out your ideas. But apart from the financial returns, obviously, of growing a successful business and successfully exiting it, how do you see the impact that e-commerce brands and e-commerce aggregators can create for Southeast Asia's society, right, with regards to employment, even poverty reduction, and even talking about the environment as well? Like, how is it impacting people's lives across the region, would you say?
Hard for me to tell. Like, I think the core piece around providing them opportunities to exit, for me, really encourages one level of innovation where you better thought through products actually gets to the market, which benefits consumers in general. I think aggregators across the board, what it does for the other side of things, right, which is the consumers, the buyers, is to hopefully provide them more choice, right, which is without the platform in place, some of these brands will never get to some consumers. You will never have enough stock or like have never expand to the right markets. Some brands unfortunately get stuck at a certain stage, right, and without the help of an aggregator to provide them a platform to grow, the products actually never get to the consumers that actually might want it in certain parts of the world and wouldn't have done it if there wasn't upscaling capacity behind it.
And again, the point is that rainforest really helps with generally smaller brands as well. So definitely beefing up that long tail of e-commerce that we're seeing here in the region, where they could become more competitive with respect to these larger brands as well. Where do you see rainforest in the next 5 years? And especially with respect to something that you mentioned earlier about not just keeping to the acquisition or exit aspect of helping these entrepreneurs?
Obviously, the other part of the business is we need to grow the brands that we have and have a cohesive portfolio of brands. I think the end goal or signs that we're hitting success is that like we have a growing portfolio of brands with cohesiveness around who's the buyer behind it and the categories that we're in, such that like there's more similarities around the people who are buying it. And they start looking at us as a house of brands where we have products for you, right? So if you are of a certain demographic, you have a good chance of having one of our products in your home or in your life, right? Like there's this interesting company called Helen of Troy. If you haven't heard of it, like it's not unusual, right? But they actually own the brands like OXO, Revlon, Braun, Hydro Flask, Vicks, right? Like, so they are a house of brands that most people will have their products in their home, but no one has any idea that like it's Helen of Troy, right? Similarly for Rainforest, their consumer brands are there, they're part of their lives, but not necessarily the parent company. And we hope to play the similarly meaningful way, but in a sort of digital first manner, which is if you sort of rethink what a consumer goods company looks like, what do we look like, right? Like, you know, will you need so many distributors? How big the team is? Do you need offices in every part of the world? I think we will rebuild it in a very different way.
On that note, I'd like to move into our second part of our podcast, which is the rapid fire round. Hopefully we can be a little bit more casual and I'll just be asking some quick questions and you can give some short and sweet answers. So the first one is top three skills of a startup CEO.
Yeah, I think I will say it's a vision, communicating it and being able to pull the right people on board to join the ship.
What's your top recommended resource? Could be a book, could be a podcast that you listen to, or could be a series or a video even for solo or micro entrepreneurs.
Well, for inspiration, I think for solo micro entrepreneurs, I think the more recent one, there's this book called Billion Dollar Brand Club. It's the one I just recently read. It's about Dollar Shave Club and a whole bunch of D2C brands. So, some good inspiration.
What's the biggest misconception about growing a successful e-commerce brand here in Asia?
Sometimes there's a lot of misconception around the fact that like, you need to have like a crazily distinctive different product, right? Like I don't think you actually need to reinvent Dyson vacuum cleaner. You just need to be just slightly better. Like when I say slightly better, just in terms of quality, reliability, color, like, and that's actually goes quite far, right? And that's a good place to start. So I think like just getting started on something that is marginally better gets you some way already in the e-commerce world. And that's why it's interesting. And I think in the startup world, you always talk about this idea of 10x product, right? Like this is not true in the physical goods world. And there's a lot of choices and you think about different segments and you can do something that makes sense for one specific segment.
Yeah, definitely a game of margins, so to speak. And given that Rainforest has raised, you know, very successful equity rounds and debt rounds as well this past year, what's your advice for first-time founders raising their first round of venture funding?
Yeah, I would say definitely think hard about how much do you need, why do you need the funds, and do you need to really raise it in the first place? I think there's a bit of overall narrative here around hey, we need to start a company in the raise funds and so on. Like, it's not true. Tons of people have created great companies without raising any external money. And the best place to start raising money from is your customers, right? So if you can do that, start from that. But like, obviously, if you need capital, then you find it from the right people.
And I guess that advice also extends to the e-commerce entrepreneurs as well, thinking about whether you actually need to get acquired by a company like Great Forest.
Exactly, right.
Okay, so apart from being a founder, you're also an angel investor. So what's your advice for, you know, aspiring angel investors?
I think the core thing for angel investors is to understand like what's your underlying motivation, which is like, what are you trying to do here? Is this a asset allocation game? You're parking your funds in different places, or as a financial outcomes that's called to you? Or is it something around keeping in touch with the scene, like understanding what's new, or are you sort of keen to come in and help build the next generation of entrepreneurs? So I think understanding what your core is and then like sticking to that way you sort of make your decisions is a core piece, right? Because if you're tight on the financial side of things, then you have a different set of criteria, right? Like for me, it's sort of like this intersection between helping local founders here, particularly around the less likely ones, right? For me, I like the idea of like finding the underdog, not quite the obvious McKinsey, BA, and like Harvard guy. I think like for me, that's, yeah, I know that guy will get funded, right? Like for me, it's the idea of sort of finding some entrepreneurs that's not considered mainstream going to be successful and helping them, giving them that chance, particularly if they come with sort of the right idea. So understand what your own motivation is. For me, a core piece is around, can I also put in to help nudge some of these entrepreneurs that on average may not have gotten funded?
Great advice. My next question is, with your extensive experience, which I mentioned at the start of the podcast with Carousel and Airbnb, what's the biggest learning from those experiences that you brought into Rainforest?
The theme continues from before. It's really finding the right people on board to join the team, right? And this is not about just getting A-star players per se, right? I think it's finding the right team, right? Because not everyone comes in and it's all like playing a star role. For me, I think of it very much like a football team or a sports team. How do you sort of get the right kind of mix that balances everyone's capabilities? And not necessarily great superstars in every area per se, but the right balance. And so thinking deliberately about that is a core piece of it. And how you design the organization is a big piece of it.
We've talked about Paolo's mugs and maybe Paolo's guitars, but if you were to develop your own product and brand, what did you want to do?
Oh, wow. We're just off the Facebook Meta announcement. So like anything that has to do with products in the metaverse for me is like super cool. Maybe it's not Facebook cracking it, but like I do think that like something along the lines of like the computing platform of the future is completely different from the phones that we use today. And I think something in that space would be pretty cool.
Definitely more devices to make that whole metaverse seamless and possible. What do you do to de-stress? What's your favorite thing to do to de-stress?
I like tinkering with new stuff, new technologies, new apps, new gadgets. That's one of the things that I enjoyed.
What's the newest app or device or technology that you tinkered with?
So I just got this pair of Ray-Ban Stories glasses, the Facebook one that has camera and sound and all, just recently. So it's sunglasses.
How's the user experience so far? What would you say?
I think it feels like an iPhone 1, right? Like it's really clunky, like not quite there. Some things are there, like the foundations of it are there, but like Grant, it's not quite a Ready Player One anytime soon yet.
Last question for this podcast, anything you'd like to promote or share with our audience?
Like I mentioned earlier, like if you're sort of listening to this, you have some e-commerce idea, be encouraged to try it. The cost of failure is low. The reward success is high. It's on those what you call a asymmetric bet, typically, if you get it right, where the side is much, much better than any downside, is not that costly. I think the time to build and create things is now. Obviously, it doesn't have to be the e-commerce sector, right? I think if you are in this part of the world, starting a company and building something is extremely meaningful. I think we need much more of that here.
And on that note, thank you so much, JJ, for coming on the show, sharing with us more about the world of e-commerce brands, e-commerce aggregators, and the work that Rainforest is doing to work with, you know, solar micro entrepreneurs and how they can build really successful brands and potentially successful business exits as well. Here in Insignia, we're privileged to have partnered with Rainforest early on, even as you mentioned, really introducing you to your co-founders as well, and excited to see where you take things from here. So once again, thanks for coming on the show, JJ.
Thanks, Paolo.
Stay on the line with us for more conversations with our founders and investors in the region. Until your next call, I am Paolo Aquino, and this has been On Call with Insignia Ventures.